This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Friday, April 12, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, a key GM pickup plant will go offline for retooling. Investigators say a driver assistance system was active during a fatal Ford crash in Texas. And auto suppliers face EPA scrutiny over forever chemicals. Plus, we'll hear how one dealership group is trying to hire more women in its service department.
Thanks to the internet, thanks to phones, we're never going to have a price or a product advantage again. So the real battleground becomes your people.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
General Motors plans to take its full-size pickup plant in Indiana offline for a few weeks this spring and summer. The automaker will retool the factory as it prepares to build next-generation Chevrolet Silverados and GMC Sierras. In a statement, a GM spokesperson said downtime is set for the weeks of April 29th, June 24th, and July 8th at Fort Wayne Assembly. Four components plants across the Midwest will also go idle due to the Fort Wayne downtime, though GM hasn't finalized when that will happen. The company says it does not expect the downtime to affect its ability to meet customer demand.
U.S. safety investigators say a Ford Mustang Mach-E was using an advanced driver assistance system during a fatal crash in February. The Ford struck the rear of a stationary Honda CR-V on I-10 in San Antonio, Texas. Based on data from the vehicle, the NTSB says the Ford driver had been operating in Blue Cruise mode before the crash that killed the 56-year-old Honda driver. Blue Cruise is an advanced hands-free driving system that operates on 97% of U.S. and Canadian highways.
The chair of the U.S. Senate Banking Committee is urging President Joe Biden to block Chinese-made vehicles from the United States auto market. Senator Sherrod Brown is a Democrat from Ohio. He wrote a letter to President Biden that calls Chinese electric vehicles an existential threat to the American auto industry. He writes, quote, "I implore you to take bold, aggressive action and to permanently ban EVs produced by Chinese companies or whatever subsidiaries they establish to conceal their origins." The letter marks the strongest call yet for action against China's automakers by a U.S. lawmaker. The White House did not immediately comment on the letter. Brown is running for re-election this year.
And the EPA this week made its most significant move yet to crack down on PFAS forever chemicals. But it's a move that could cause some friction with automotive suppliers. PFAS chemicals are linked with higher rates of cancer and other negative health effects. This week, the EPA announced its first ever drinking water standard to protect people against the chemicals. Still, the auto industry relies on some of those chemicals for crucial components and materials, including those used in electric vehicles. Alex Bosenberg with supplier trade group MEMA says, quote, "It's one more challenge in an already challenging scenario." You can read more at autonews.com. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, the U.S. Senate Banking Committee chair is urging the president to block Chinese-made vehicles from the U.S. market. Now, didn't I ask you hypothetically about this a few weeks ago? And if the president were to make a move like this, wouldn't it violate trade agreements?
I think it would almost certainly violate the WTO, or at least it would raise a challenge there. And that's probably the place to bring a challenge maybe to the Chinese imports if they were to try to do this on a large scale. Of course, we have vehicles imported from China already, despite pretty hefty tariffs. There's a handful of, I think, Ford and Buicks and Volvos that come over. So that's problematic. I think much like when former President Trump was saying he would, you know, have 100% tariff on Chinese imports. I think, again, it's very much political speech rather than a serious policy effort. But, you know, political speech is allowed, and that's part of what happens. But I think it would be really challenging legally to have a real Chinese ban.
Gotcha. Coming up, we'll hear why one dealership group is working hard to hire more women in its service department and what's working. That's next on Daily Drive.
UAW President Sean Fain says the union has the best opportunity for growth in his lifetime.
Well, I look at my grandparents' generation, you know, coming out of the Great Depression in the 30s and 40s when labor exploded at that time. And I think it's a similar situation.
In his exclusive interview with our own Michael Martinez, Fain talks about the upcoming vote to unionize Volkswagen's plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and what this moment means for the future of the American labor movement.
Come back on Monday and Tuesday to hear our two-part interview on Daily Drive with UAW President Sean Fain, wherever you get your podcasts.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract combined with AutoVision creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/AutoVision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/AutoVision.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. Women represent about 7% of dealership service department staff, and there are efforts to increase those numbers. At West Her Automotive Group in Western New York, Service Director Tom Drzezinski has started a program to train women from its Business Development Center to become service advisors. Drzezinski spoke with Senior Editor Dan Schein about the program's origins and how it works.
Tom, thanks so much for joining us on the Fixed Ops Friday edition of Daily Drive.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Dan.
So we've got a wonderful story that's online, autonews.com, and will be in the Monday issue, print issue of Automotive News. And that's about the dealership you work at, or the dealership group, West Her, starting a new service advisor training program, but it's mostly, you know, designed for women. Tell me a little bit about how this idea came about and you wanted to start this.
Well, we've been monitoring for a while our diversity overall, just looking at gender by role, looking at a few different metrics like that. And one of the things that sticks out is we really are a male-dominated business for the most part. And I think it's doubly true in the fixed operations side of the house. So looking to try to get a wider perspective, a little bit different, more diverse group of people at our service desks and within our service departments, it really dawned on me that we really should be focusing on trying to get some more females, some more women into fixed operations positions. It's very difficult to affect things like technicians, but service advisors, it just worked out that we happen to have our own in-house department with our BDC with 42, it was all female at the time, 42 women, know the phone systems, know the people, know the service advisors, know a little bit of the product. We know that they have phone skills. Seemed to be a perfect place to start to draw some of that talent.
It's kind of a natural. I mean, it's always good to recruit people off the street and all that, but here you've got a kind of built-in group. They know the culture, like you said, you know, they know each other, they know what's expected of them. And so you're just kind of teaching them a new skill.
Agreed. And it's a beautiful thing just too, because it allows our BDC to actually become an entry-level position and one that has some upside to it, something to aspire to. And it's not just a call center where people kind of come in and out. Really does create a career path for them.
So I think this kind of launched sometime in February, because I think we met each other right around that time at NADA in Las Vegas. Four women when this kind of first cohort. Tell me kind of how the training, how long it lasts, and what you kind of teach these women to be service advisors. How that's kind of set up?
So we set it up as a 6-month program so as to not be overwhelming. It combines classroom learning with some online learning, and then we're lucky enough to have a service lane within a building that's not being used. So we then partner the classroom learning with some made-up scenarios where we're doing role-playing within that service lane. So as they have a day in the classroom, the following day, they are then partnered with a hand-selected mentor service advisor, where they start to shadow that advisor. Initially, they're just watching. They're looking at some of the things that they just learned, but really watching how the job is done and getting an understanding of the nuts and bolts. And as the training progresses, they get a little bit more and more hands-on until they're handling objections, dealing with some difficult customer scenarios, opening and closing repair orders, understanding discounts and the accounting side, purchase orders. So as it progresses, it gets more and more detailed until after a 6-month time period, we have a working service advisor that's ready to come out and go into a store or into one of our floating roles.
I think you said in the article, it's even like, you know, when they've kind of advanced and they're kind of getting the hang of it, they're available to kind of sub in. You know, if someone calls in sick from one of your stores, then you've got someone on the bench there. You can insert into that role for the day or two, or however long that person may be gone.
Correct. And it's perfect for us. I mean, with 150 service advisors and many of them with, you know, 3 and 4 weeks vacation plus additional time off and 4-day schedules. And it really slows the shops right down if I don't have somebody to fill in when a service advisor is out. And we've got to back schedules off and then the technicians aren't happy. So we try to keep 4 to 6 floating service advisors on staff at all times. But these candidates coming out of the BDC, they're going to be perfect to start backfilling those spots.
And once these women finish their 6 months, will you start up a second kind of cohort soon after that? And are you thinking four is the magic number? Or maybe you would expand it to 6 or 8, depending on interest?
With the right interest and the right candidates, we did interview the candidates that were selected. They were candidates that had some interest in being a service advisor to begin with. But they also, their attendance, their call quality, all of the right metrics were there, and it gained them access to this program. But we do plan on running another cohort. I'm thinking if I can keep it to 5 to 6, that really is a good enough amount to be able to get some one-on-one attention. It's not a class that feels too big. Everybody already knows each other, which is nice. So they're pretty comfortable around each other. They're not afraid to make mistakes and ask questions. But that 4 to 6 seems about the right number.
And you're very intentional about that. You're trying to bring more women into the service drive in all sorts of roles, but starting out as a service advisor. You have obviously a lot of service advisors under, I think, 26 rooftops or so that you have. What is it about women that you think makes them? I've kind of read this and heard from other people that they're in many ways as good, probably better service advisors than men. What is it, do you think, that maybe kind of separates women as in this role and makes them better than the men are?
Well, it's interesting. And we're up to 39 rooftops now, or 39 dealerships. But it's one of those things where I think, I hate to really generalize, but what I find is a lot of our very successful women service advisors, their ability to quickly create some rapport, gain trust, there's a sense of empathy that you really need to have in our business in this job role. People really have choices, you know, and thanks to the internet, thanks to phones, we're never going to have a price or a product advantage again. So the real battleground becomes your people. And being able to communicate with a wide range of personalities, but again, be able to show some empathy, be able to quickly connect with that customer, have their best interest in mind, while at the same time, you know, understanding that we are business, we are in sales, we do have to ask for the sale. I just think that they do a great job with some of the things that are not teachable.
And I know the BDC has a good potential candidate grouping, but you've also talked about maybe other roles that maybe typically are filled by females than males, like in cashiers or other roles within dealership, are also potential candidates to become part of this training program.
Yes. Well, our BDC is traditionally 96 to 100%, but normally stays at 96 to 98% female. Our cashiers across the group are 100% female. And especially as we start to progress to more and more advisor cashiering and the cashiering position, you start to deal with AI for incoming phone calls. Those positions and that experience, we've hired them for a reason. We hired them because they're the right people. They fit our core values. They mesh well with the group. So for us to be able to still pull from that group as well, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's another perfect group of people to be able to pull for candidates for this program.
Well, Tom, it's an interesting program. We love featuring it in Automotive News and really appreciate you coming on and talking about it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Dan.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News coordinating producer Jake Neer, as well as our own Lindsey Van Hulley and John Irwin for their reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on service and parts, manufacturing, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back over the weekend for our Weekend Drive edition of the show. Our own Michael Martinez will preview next week's UAW vote at Volkswagen's assembly plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
As you're driving into the Chattanooga plant, there were dozens and dozens of anti-union yard signs. My favorite was, "Don't Detroit My Chattanooga."
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.